Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. Before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision and her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer and The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Pushkin. Alexander O'Connor wasn't expecting the music sharing platform SoundCloud to change his life. The 18-year-old British musician was just uploading songs for fun. But then people started taking notice of him and his musical persona, Rex Orange County. These early recordings started racking up hundreds of thousands of plays pretty quickly. And one of those people listening was Tyler, the Creator, who we just featured on the podcast a couple of episodes ago. Tyler liked what he heard from Rex OC so much that he wound up flying him out to LA to work on one of his albums, Flower Boy. And that's not Rex's only famous collaborator, Randy Newman. The legendary singer-songwriter duetted with Rex on his Toy Story classic, You've Got a Friend in Me. After all of that, Alex, aka Rex, is still only 21 years old, and he's hit another major milestone. He's just released his major label debut, Pony. Rex sat over the summer with Rick Rubin to preview some of the album for him and to talk through the tracks. He discusses why he's collaborating less and less with other artists these days and how that's helped him find his voice for his new project, which he wrote, recorded, and played almost entirely by himself. This is Broken Records Season 3, Liner Notes for the Digital Age. I'm Justin Richmond. Just a quick note here. You can listen to all of the music mentioned in this episode on our playlist, which you can find a link to in the show notes. For licensing reasons, each time a song is referenced in this episode, you'll hear this sound effect. Let's listen in now on Rick's conversation with Rex Orange County.
Hello, yes. Testing 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3, testing.
Is it good? Yay. We can talk.
Let's talk.
Okay. So since I saw you last,
mm-hmm.
Where have you been? What have you been up to?
Since I saw you last, I've been mainly at home in London, and I haven't gone away too much. I haven't actually been in America too much or anywhere else. I've kind of just spent a lot of time in my own space and with the people who I made the first music ever with, and kind of just like gotten back to how it was, how it always worked best after trying a few things. But it was probably like a period of time after we first met where I was trying working with other people, and certain things worked and a lot of things didn't. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to let people in, I find, on the whole, when you have a lot of control already. But I spent a lot of time at home, writing and figuring out this next album.
Yeah, it's great that you gave yourself the time and experience of trying those different things to see what works and what doesn't. Because some people, once things get rolling, kind of get on a track of starting a project,
mm-hmm.
and then sometimes go in maybe not the best direction and don't really stop and think, you know, don't pull back. So it's great that you got to do all that and see, this works, this doesn't work. And
absolutely. No, I'm so grateful I did, because the last thing I want is to feel as if I've settled for something that isn't maybe right. And you do have to try those things. More importantly, to know that they're not right, maybe, than that they were. We got a song for the album that's pretty good and it's with a cool person or whatever, but it's more valuable maybe to go try that thing and realize that it didn't work and
absolutely
come back home and not work with those people anymore.
For sure. I like to think that there are no failed experiments. You know, no. It's like every experiment we learn from and we see what works and what doesn't. And it's really helpful in finding our direction. And it's impossible to know in advance, you know, until you do it. It's impossible.
Of course. I agree totally.
I'm really anxious to hear it.
Of course. Maybe we should hear it.
Looking forward to listening.
Okay, great. All right. It's and it's mainly me. And there's no other sort of like listed features, actually.
Mm-hmm.
The only other voice on there is my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the only other instrumentalists other than the producer is Pino playing bass, which was amazing. But I don't want to give too much context, but that's generally like, that's
okay.
Hopefully that makes some sense. Let me just make sure.
Let's actually stop and talk about it a little bit.
Thanks.
It's completely not what I was expecting at all.
No.
Much more upbeat, much more, I'll use the word poppy in a melodic way.
Sure.
Whereas I feel like the other music of yours that I've heard before was more about the style and less about the melody.
Yeah.
And now it's really has a different energy, but it still has the vibes of the original. Or I'll call it, it's not moodiness, but emotion of your original style.
Sure.
But in a completely different context. And it's really surprising and refreshing.
I'm so glad you reacted that way. I definitely feel as if it was melody driven. Like the song was not lyrically developed at all right at the beginning, and it existed for a week or so as just the melody and the structure and the chords existing as a thing before the lyrics, actually.
Yes.
And so it kind of just like, that was already very much so solid. And I've been listening to that voice memo of me just like mumbling it over and over and stuff. And it's kind of like, it was way more based within the song and the melody, actually, I think, primarily. And it wasn't necessarily about what I had to say first off. So I think that I'm glad that came through.
I also really love there's a part towards the beginning of the song when the beat drops out, and the sound of the vocal really changes.
Yeah.
It's subtle, but when it changes, it gets much more intimate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
It's really like tasteful production. So.
Yes, sir. Thank you. That's me and my good friend Ben Bapti as well. It's just me and him in a room. He mixed my last album. He mixed this one too, but he became pretty much my rock of just like my co-producer, my partner along the whole way. And he did a lot sonically that, and it taught me a lot actually sonically. It just explained why he felt like things sounded better like this or didn't sound as good like this. And and actually informed me a lot on that kind of stuff as well. And and now it allows me to go and be like, oh, I think the second verse should be really up close. So that the vocal comes up and it becomes more intimate and you can talk about it on just a feeling level, but he can just achieve that.
Feels really fresh.
Thank you. I'll play this next one.
Well, let me just ask, can you guys send in a pad and a pen? Thanks. Okay.
This next one is the one, Pino.
Ah, nice.
Felt like he deserved to be on it.
When we come back, Rex will break down Face to Face, the new track we just heard.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply. Hello, hello. This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. Let me tell you an unconventional story about a healthcare group that wanted to improve their efficiency. Boston Children's Hospital. They were already a leading pediatric facility. Their patient outcomes, workflows, and delivery of care were already great. but they wondered, how can we make it better? So the hospital got to work. Their idea was to build what they called clinical mobility, meaning a system which would allow their staff to access information and interact with patients on mobile devices anywhere in the hospital. And what made that possible? 5G. The hospital rebuilt their entire system with 5G technology at its core. That infrastructure now supports thousands of phones and tablets so practitioners can communicate with patients on a whole new level. Boston Children's also made sure the system could flex and scale to handle medical advancements like robotic surgery and virtual reality for training and research. This was worlds away from how they had previously operated. This innovative work hasn't gone unnoticed, first by patients, but also by their peers. Boston Children's was a first place winner in the industry category at last year's Unconventional Awards from T-Mobile for Business, an event that celebrates customers who've dared to innovate for the sake of innovation. If the Boston Children's story rings a bell with you, if your team has asked the same questions about building a better business solution, I encourage you to enter this year's awards. It's a great way to be recognized for smart, disruptive thinking in front of some of your industry's most influential leaders. You can enter at tmobile.com/unconventionalawards. That's tmobile.com/unconventionalawards. I'll save you a seat.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
We're back with Rex and Rick talking about the song Face to Face.
So how did that one come about?
That one was actually the first thing I made on my laptop after my last album. Mm-hmm. And it was the part, just the keys part, that is just like the sine waves doing the really simple two chord part. And it actually existed on my laptop for a long time before I figured out what I wanted to say on it or figured out where I wanted to take it musically. It was always just this thing between two chords and had a few synth lines on top of each other and just a few bits of it, really. And what happened was, over time, the song itself is about feeling like you want to be back home with the person you actually want to be with, and missing the person you love and feeling like you're stuck in some kind of situation elsewhere geographically, and literally that thing where you're somewhere else where you don't really want to be with people who you don't really want to be with, and I had to have that situation, which was bigger than just that one day of like feeling that thing and having phone calls where we both wake up, we're both on the phone with each other, but she's in bed, we're both in bed, but she, it's the morning for her and it's I'm about to go to sleep or whatever. It's really surreal when you're just like really angry, but really, really missing someone at the same time and feeling emotional. And I had to have that before I actually wrote the whole song in one go lyrically. One of the only times that really happened, and ended up fitting it to the original project that was not meant to be. It was the original instrumental was just for whatever I was going to write over it, but obviously it kept its place. But
when you wrote the words, did you write the words with the chords in mind, or did you write it more like a poem and then realize that they worked over the chords?
The latter. I wrote them as a...
So you wrote the verse free.
Yeah.
And then found that it worked over this music.
Yeah, I imagined it to be some kind of disco-ish sort of 120, 110 tempo of just four to the floor, and I could imagine it, but I didn't hear those chords necessarily, and I just fit them. I pretty much what you just said, had the lyrics. And then fit those to everything else.
Interesting. And when did the beat come?
The beat was actually in the original Logic file, which was just some Logic drums that were just put in on the keyboard.
It sounded like I could imagine the beat being there from the beginning, but it can sound like that, but it doesn't mean that happened. Sounded like that, so I was curious.
Yeah, no, that was always there from the beginning, but it was never meant to come in until, it was always meant to come in where it came in.
Yes.
Yeah.
But still, I feel like that beat's implied through the whole thing. You know, like I feel that energy.
Mm-hmm.
When the beat comes in, it doesn't feel like, yes, it feels like dramatic because it's a beat. but I feel like we're already in that rhythm.
Yeah.
Clearly.
You're prepared for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure. Absolutely.
That's great.
So musically, it didn't change much from the original idea.
Not a lot. There was a lot of chipping away at adding things that we felt like within the studio, having like different, you know, the Mellotron in the bridge and the idea of having the strings there or not. And like, there were things that were conversations that me and Ben had for a long time. But actually on the whole, yeah, pretty much came in a certain way and was done over two or three days first time, got it to a certain point where it pretty much sounded like a rough version of this, pretty much. But then there was a lot of details that we wanted to go into over time and changing certain bits and it's kind of hard to remember in a way. It's almost like it's a blur of like, it was always, from the day that I've figured out that poem would work over this thing, it's kind of just since then, it's like, well, I just put it there and did my best and he did his best. And that was, it's hard to really explain.
Completely understood. I understand that in the, in that moment of the burst of creativity, of like discovery,
mm-hmm.
a lot of things happen very quickly.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I know in my experiences, sometimes I'll hear something after we've recorded it and I don't even remember that it happened because it's, you're kind of in this zone where things are just happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards you look back, it's like, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Like I know I was involved, but I don't really remember how that happened.
Exactly. Yeah.
Very exciting. It's a thrilling feeling. It's like almost being in an altered state.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, yeah. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, often. No, often. It happens. It's. I feel like a lot of the time in the studio, we're waiting for that to happen.
Mm.
I don't think about it as waiting, but there's a lot of times when sort of we know that there's something that needs to happen.
Yeah.
And we're just kind of waiting until the stars align, and then all of a sudden it starts happening, mm-hmm. and then it sort of feels almost out of control that it just, this momentum starts. I always, when I realize it's happening, I always try to relax and just think, okay, I just hope that it goes as long as it can go.
Yeah.
Just like stay out of the way of this momentum that's arrived.
Yeah. Within the air. Definitely. I have that. I've had that a few times, but it's, you always, I think you, I always had an intention, but you never, it's hard to explain the process, but in the middle, I can just look back at what I originally was trying to do. And go, well, I did achieve that or I didn't, but it's still great and it's better for it. And we found something else that I wasn't expecting. But it's hard to sometimes pin down the moment in the middle bit, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when did Pino play on it?
He played on it probably three quarters of the way through making it. So it was already practically like, it just had a synth bass, I think, before that was just kind of driving on like half time of the drums I think what happened was I was speaking to someone who said you should try and not do everything yourself and you should try and invest in people who are really, really great at their craft because if they've spent their whole life doing that one thing, then on paper, they can do it. They can do it the best or whatever. Or it's like compared to you're competent. I'm competent on bass and there's a lot of this album I played the bass on, but it was not because those songs didn't necessarily in my head feel as if they deserved like the, you know, it wasn't all about the bass, I don't think, those other songs. Yeah. But that one for me and Ben and him and I had a conversation where it was like, do we just, you know, soon after that other conversation about you should invest in, you know, other people who do their thing, not do everything yourself. I just said, why don't we get Pino to play on this song? And I think we joked about it before and was like, imagine if he would ever do such a thing.
Yeah.
But you realize these people are around and they do actually play, you know, their instruments for people when you ask. So you just had to ask. And it was a very, very special moment for me because I was just a big fan of him and all his work and having him do it so quickly. And I'm sure, I know you've worked with him.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Did you play him the original bass part or did you just play him the track with nothing?
I played, do you know what happened? I played him the, we sent him the song and it had the signed bass in. And
I see.
He actually called me to find out how I wanted to do it in terms of keeping the signed bass in or not, because he was like, I quite like how it is in there and I wonder if we can have the digital bass and the and meet the live human bass working together. And I was like, I'd like to know, see if we can or can't. And he came in open-minded and we quickly realized that it was better with just him than the synths. But he called me to say what should we do with that, because I'm interested to know that. I said in the email, it's like, oh, there's already a bass part there, but obviously it's a case of either switching it out or seeing how it goes. But he actually picked up on that and we had the conversation and it worked out
great
for the best.
What would you say, what would you consider your influences?
Throughout everything? Or
in general. I don't think we ever talked about this before.
Maybe not. I feel like as a child, I was very open to kind of a lot of different types of music. And I was inspired a lot by bands and I played the drums. So I was listening to Weezer and Blink-182 and Green Day and... To put like a corner of those type that type of music at a young age I really loved. And then there was this thing, now that's what I call music CDs, where they would have just like a compilation of pop music and it's like, but they would have like Homecoming by Kanye on there, or they'd have like Atomic Kitten, or like there was like real like pop, or just like Girls Aloud. It was just like every sort of side of pop music that was still working on the radio or could go on this compilation CD. And I think I was just exposed to a lot of different stuff. And I soon realized, like I didn't really realize until maybe a couple years ago, but certain things you're drawn to, and it was like certain things, certain places resonate with you or don't. And it's very easy, it's hard to like fake enthusiasm actually if you're somewhere or you hear something that you're not actually into. So there's certain things for me, I think I just was always drawn to things, not necessarily who they were by. I would never be like, oh, I love that artist, everything by them is great. It's like I find that hard even today to say I love everything from one person. There's really a small handful of people who've ever done that for me. But I found people like Kanye and people like Stevie Wonder at a young age, and his discography was one of the first things I've really found. Like there were so many different styles, but just using a lot of the same chords, but so many different chords in different keys, and just realized, I kind of just realized what a genius was. But then at the same time at school, people would show me Eminem and Jay-Z and have like show me a MP3 player in the flesh, and I had an MP3 player with one Eminem song and one Jay-Z song, and I think it was Fack by Eminem, unfortunately. Well, not unfortunately, it was amazing really, but like that was like one of the first rap songs I ever heard. And then I believe it was What More Can I Say or something from the Black Album by Jay, I think, which was, but at that time I was just kind of like didn't know what that even was, and that was just my first introduction. So I feel as if I was just gravitated towards what was put in front of me, but then there was so much put in front of me, I didn't have to get into all these other like bands from pop bands from the UK and stuff. Certain things I was into, certain songs, but there's a lot of chords, and I think a lot of theory and certain vocal melodies and stuff actually that I wasn't like always driven to melody. Sometimes there would just be the chords and there would be a vocalist doing something that actually didn't really resonate with me, but I could just point out certain bits that I loved about it. Mainly music, actually. Honestly, like I haven't really had a lot of... I'd be lying if I said I'm really influenced by films and stuff, because I'm not. But I enjoy watching films, like a lot of people. But I think most of what truly, truly resonates with me is either just like people saying words that make me want to go and do something, or real like sound and sonics and chords and music from any type of person, any type of band. Just a lot of influences really that could go on a long list, but I think when I really put it down to just what resonates with me, I think that's all. And I love music as well, so it probably helps, you know.
When did you start experimenting with chords? It moved from drums to keys.
I actually probably experimented with the keys before the good idea. I probably experimented with keys before drums, and was playing like Coldplay songs on the piano at a young age, like whilst learning drums. But there was a point when I was at school, I went to a place called the Brit School. And when I arrived there on my first day, I met a guy called Jim who played the drums. And I came as a drummer as well. And in the year, there were sort of like four or five people that played drums. And they had everyone perform a set, like a, not a set, sorry, like a solo performance on the first day. So we could all kind of like show the year what we did. And I remember watching Jim play drums and I just thought, I don't think I'm a drummer. I think he is a drummer. I think I'm someone that is competent on drums and I love the drums, but I've spent time doing a bit of keys. I've spent time doing a bit of this and like singing and stuff. And Jim, or I'm assuming having not knowing him at the time, I was like, I guess this guy's just spent his whole life doing drums because he sounds like someone who's put so much into the drums, which I can't catch up on that. And there's so many people out there, you know, it's very instant, like, well, that's probably not my calling.
Yeah.
I think that's his calling or someone else of that sort. And what happened was that sparked me to think that I could just do something else, and people were putting me onto other solo artists that I was unaware of and like singers who played the guitar, and I never really was interested in the guitar as much. It was more the piano, and so I kind of was like, well, if I can translate the chords from the piano over to the guitar, I don't have to be much of a guitarist. I can just be someone playing music through using a guitar. So I can't play really a guitar solo competently, but I could still to this day, I'm still just more of just a chord guy, if you want. I just kind of translated it over to that. But it was at school, middle of school, and I realized I couldn't be a drummer, didn't want to be a drummer, would rather be something else, and also had a lot on my mind that I wanted to talk about. And they came at the right times together, and I was like, what else can I do? Let's just, you know, found a way, spent the summer in someone's house just recording, and very amateur in a good way and very DIY, and just... yeah, it just all came. It was like right place, right time. I was lucky. It was quite early on in my life, to be honest.
And so cool.
It was, yeah.
How old were you when the first thing you released your first piece of music?
I think I had just turned 17.
Wow.
I think I'd maybe, or just a few months after being 17.
Yeah.
On SoundCloud.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
SoundCloud's been good to you.
It really has. It really has. And I did the first album there as well. And then you go on SoundCloud every day and watch it go up, and you're like, wow. And it's not on actual streaming services yet. They really, it was me, you know, the artist does it, whatever it, the music speaks for itself, but the platform was really genuinely useful for that
I
time.
I wonder if timing had anything to do with it as well. Cause I feel like when I heard about you, I was listening to a lot of music on SoundCloud.
Yeah.
And I feel like lately I haven't been listening to as much on SoundCloud. You as well?
I haven't. I definitely haven't.
It's interesting. It's like, I wonder how that works. It's just fascinating.
What are you listening to music on at the moment?
I've been listening mostly to like classical music and jazz from all different places.
Mm-hmm.
But not so much. Usually the only new music that I listen to is when a friend tells me to listen to something.
Sure.
And for some reason, I went from a phase of not listening to much hip hop to listening to much more hip hop, much more new hip hop, which I'm really enjoying. Yeah.
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 Great.
Feels like it's an interesting moment in hip hop because I'm hearing usually the thing that most excites me about music is when it sounds like something I haven't heard before and is really surprising.
Mm-hmm.
Yet I'm hearing some hip hop now that is not so surprising. In some ways, it's ordinary, yet it's a very, very, very good version of ordinary,
yeah.
And I like it.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So that's a little bit of a new experience right now for me.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do love some new rappers, actually, and love some new rap. And there's definitely that element of it's not necessarily surprising.
What new in hip-hop have you been listening to that you like?
I like DaBaby. I don't know if you've heard DaBaby. You should listen to him. He's a DA baby.
Yeah.
And he's from North Carolina. He's from Charlotte. And he's just got a specific flow that actually, talking about it, it's like I haven't actually really heard much exactly like him. I just mean, he's very clever lyrically, and his beats are very simple and effective. And I think a lot of this new rap, actually, some of it's very simple and not effective, but some of it, when you get it right, and all subjective again, like some things resonate with me, some things don't, but some of these rap songs feel very effective in their simplicity. And I like not hearing ad-libs before when you first hear it, and then later on listening and being like, that's where the energies come from, of them shouting behind their other vocal, but I didn't even realize the first few times.
Yes.
No, that's a simple thing, but that's
yes.
just an observation.
Yeah.
It's hard to list names. There is also so many names in the conversation, I think.
Absolutely.
And now more than
no,
ever.
No, it's endless. It's endless, and it feels like the turnover or the excitement about music, it moves much faster. Mm-hmm. Like when I hear something, even something that I really love, I listen to it and then there's something new that replaces that slot sooner than later,
yeah.
Which didn't used to be the case. I used to really live with things that I liked for a long time.
Of course.
So it's happening, feels like it's happening less. Not sure why.
No. I wonder if it's just because of the amount of things that are out. And I wonder if that means that that gives people a reason to be less impressed and maybe just it's landfill amounts of music to the point where it's like, well, okay, once you're done with something, if it doesn't really resonate with you, then it's quite easy to feel like you can just move on to the next thing and hope that there's something else, because there probably will be, because there's mm-hmm. so much music out. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking from the perspective of maybe a listener that I can't necessarily relate with. I don't know what I'm guessing. This is an assumption, but I think it's just quite a lot of music out there.
It's true. Let's hear the next song.
Let's hear it.
When we come back, we'll have more of Rick's conversation with Rex Orange County, and we'll hear his new song, Stressed Out.
As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet, but you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Hello, hello. This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. Let me tell you an unconventional story about a healthcare group that wanted to improve their efficiency. Boston Children's Hospital. They were already a leading pediatric facility. Their patient outcomes, workflows, and delivery of care were already great. But they wondered, how can we make it better? So the hospital got to work. Their idea was to build what they called clinical mobility, meaning a system which would allow their staff to access information and interact with patients on mobile devices anywhere in the hospital. And what made that possible? 5G. The hospital rebuilt their entire system with 5G technology at its core. That infrastructure now supports thousands of phones and tablets so practitioners can communicate with patients on a whole new level. Boston Children's also made sure the system could flex and scale to handle medical advancements like robotic surgery and virtual reality for training and research. This was worlds away from how they had previously operated. This innovative work hasn't gone unnoticed, first by patients, but also by their peers. Boston Children's was a first place winner in the industry category at last year's Unconventional Awards from T-Mobile for Business, an event that celebrates customers who've dared to innovate for the sake of innovation. If the Boston Children's story rings a bell with you, if your team has asked the same questions about building a better business solution, I encourage you to enter this year's awards. It's a great way to be recognized for smart, disruptive thinking in front of some of your industry's most influential leaders. You can enter at tmobile.com/unconventionalawards. That's tmobile.com/unconventionalawards. I'll save you a seat.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
We're back with Rex Orange County's song, Stressed Out.
How'd that one come about?
That one was actually one of the two songs on there that I wrote in a small house by myself in a place called Devon, which is in the countryside of England. It's about four and a half hours probably from here, I would imagine. And I decided to go and be by myself for a week and try and write things, because I'd spent a lot of time with, like I've mentioned earlier, with instrumentals and ideas that were either waiting for vocals or just had some vocals and were waiting for the rest of them. And I was feeling like sticking with staying in the room, listening to them over and over again, or in the presence of someone else, I just felt as if it was just maybe going to be a good thing for me to remove myself from all of it, be in the same country, but just take some time out and take some space. But it was very difficult, actually. And I actually wrote that on the last day, on the Sunday. I did 7 days and I wrote it on the final day and recorded a demo that some of the vocals and the keys, in fact, recorded off my phone, still on the same things on there. And it's kind of like it was a moment of confusion and frustration and feeling as if people, you know, there are people in the world that do take advantage of you. And there's a lot of themes of that across here, all of the songs, but it's kind of like the epitome of me being frustrated and stressed out. It's called Stressed Out. But it happened, it came from a really annoying period of time where I didn't write anything in that week, and that's all I wanted to do. And then write on the last day, I, of course, sort of finished the one thing that I really didn't loved and allowed to go.
I wonder
on.
If it's as short as it is because you wanted to get out of Devon.
Yeah, that's probably the case.
Yeah.
It probably is. It's almost like a personification of my trip.
Yeah, but it's beautiful because, again, it captures a feeling and a moment, mm-hmm. and it feels different than the rest. So it was a successful, even though you had to have this lonely week,
yeah.
You got something beautiful from it.
Exactly. That's like exactly how I feel. It's definitely got something out of it. It's definitely worth doing.
Yeah. Where would you say you recorded the majority of the album?
There was a studio in London called Strong Room, and it's in East London, and it was in a small room that belongs to the producer, Ben, and we did a lot of it in there, and then mixed a lot of it in a slightly bigger room there, and that pretty much all, I went there pretty much every day for a lot of days just to track things and try things and a lot of playing and things, like a lot of, you know, just ideas and stuff that didn't make it, but was that again, like, just the idea of going there as for as much time as I needed to get all the options, to be aware of what we didn't need to do and what I didn't want to use. But mainly in that small room, and then that Devon for this song and one other song I'll show you as well.
How many songs would you say you started that didn't make it? Like how many, just so I get a sense of the scale of the project,
sure.
to end up with 10?
It was actually not a lot more. There wasn't a lot left over. There was probably three or four that were considered, heavily considered. In fact, there was probably five. And the first three or something happened at the beginning of the album where I thought they were going to make it and they just didn't end up making it, but they were really worthwhile having there. It was only probably five songs. There was a couple of things towards the mid. There was in the middle where a lot wasn't finished, and there were other songs that weren't finished and haven't been finished since. And I'm okay with that because I sort of just got to a point where it was like, what am I really trying to say? There was maybe 15, maybe 14, 15 songs, and I was toying between 10 and 12. And I just realized my attention span is definitely not long enough these days to really give up, like put up with more than 10 to 12 songs, I think, realistically.
Agreed. I'm a fan of short these days.
Me
just
too.
Feels right.
It
feels
does.
Right.
It does. And I think other people, I can't speak for other people, but I think other
feels
people
right.
are the same. People say it was too long or like,
absolutely.
You know, because it was, yeah. or whoever's album or whatever. It's like,
yeah.
I feel like, you know, over 20 songs is just, I can't imagine loving all 20 of them.
I'd rather hear 2 8 song albums
yeah.
than 1 16 song
yeah.
album, even if it's the same songs.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Actually, I agree, but if that answers your question,
yeah I think so. And but so you said you got to 15 contenders, but were there many other songs started, like in the experimental phase, were there many starts that just never went anywhere?
There were a lot of small, yeah, there were a lot of very small starts that never went anywhere, So like really just voice notes of ideas or there was like a lot of voice notes where it was like I just knew straight away that I'd be improvising and playing the keys or the guitar, and then a lot of those just never went anywhere. And that's how I was always just, they weren't particularly like valuable, and I would know quickly if they were valuable. So like it would be this one is like, oh, this is going to be the blueprint for this song, and it ended up being whatever melody I was coming up with off the top of my head ended up being the melody for the whole song. And you just stick, I just ended up just sticking with things. And I'd say, yeah, there was a few, there was probably again like maybe 10 or 20 other like random things that, or just logic files you open up and make a couple of things. But I really don't like that feeling of pursuing something that I know maybe isn't worth it, or it's not the time. There's something about it where it just feels wrong, and I feel like I'm forcing something. And so I do usually cut it off pretty quickly and try and only pursue the things that feel, this is going to be a great song and I'm going to love it. And that's, you know.
Great. Cool. Let's hear the next one.
So this last one is the last one.
Yeah. It's really ending on, it's not the same anymore, it's better. It's really hopeful ending. It's really nice.
That was definitely intentional.
Yeah. It's funny, it's not the same, when you hear it's not the same anymore, immediately we go to missing the past and it being a negative.
And it's worse and now. Yeah,
always. Mm-hmm. But it's not the same anymore, it's better. It really feels like a new message. I love it.
That was actually, had to happen really. I would hate to have ended it on a really negative note like that. Yeah. Or just, there's a few songs where that actually happens. It starts where I'm sounding as if I'm pretty upset about things, or just sound as if I'm not happy, and then ending up, you know, you get the journey is literally just, the story is just, it was, I'm like coming out of a bad time.
Or you find the resolution through the song.
Yeah. That's the therapy itself is the writing of it. And you get to the end of the song and it's like, and that sort of cured my, for the moment, for now, I got this song out of it from just talking about it.
Beautiful. Where did this one come in the writing, in the overall scale of the project? Where did this one show up?
This was actually fairly early on and was written on guitar the guitar part was written without really any of the lyrics.
Was it written as an arpeggiated part like
it was definitely just and on the acoustic as well. And that whole middle section where it's a whole bridge of way different chords that somehow resolves back to the original, that was kind of the main challenge for me, was just writing something lyrically that could work over that whole section.
So the bridge was there from the beginning.
It was always
part of the
song. The
bridge is really spectacular. It's one of my favorite parts.
Thank you. That was definitely, it was absolutely meant to be there from the beginning, but didn't have the context over it yet. I just knew I wanted to take it all the way from like really solid, safe, basic pop chords to all the way over there, you know, six, nine chords and and just do something that I hadn't quite done, and found a couple of other shapes that I'd not used on any of the songs, and I wanted to use that as an opportunity. It was totally based on the guitar, and then at one point realized, I knew the whole time it could be the last song, and there was a moment where the sax player, same guy on all the songs, came in and did his parts on this that felt like they really tied the song together and made it definitely had to be the last song.
Yes.
And his melody, that melody at the end that is him as well, as came from his head. So it's kind of like, feels like the ultimate sort of concluding reflective feeling. It's actually really kind of somber, but very positive. And had to just write the chorus actually came pretty quickly. All the lyrics actually for this one came quite quickly. It was very easy for me to talk really honestly and be really brutal and be, it didn't take so long.
How much of the track was together before the words came? Was it more just over the guitar, or was it over the track?
I think it was more just over the guitar, and then we over time added a lot of the drums and brass and flutes and the strings obviously as well, which were probably the last thing on it, and then were just, you know, turned right down to just be there to add rather than be like another feature, because there's so much going on. But yeah, it was guitar based for a long time, and then all the other elements came over time.
Beautiful. What percentage of the songs would you say came on guitar versus piano?
I think there's more on piano. I'd say percentage-wise is about 60-40, or maybe slightly more piano, but only
a little bit more.
Only a bit more, really. And some things were then translated to keys. or vice versa. But it usually stays, they usually stay from where they began. They usually stay in that place because I feel like the chords, the way you touch either instrument are not the same at all. You can get a similar thing out of both, but in no way are they the same instrument. So it's like they're two separate things. And I think that's the best thing about both of them, is that they're not like each other.
Cool, man. I'm so happy you shared this with us, and I'm so happy you made this.
Thank you. I'm so happy that you allowed me to come over here and play it for you, because I really am glad that I could.
Many thanks to Rex Orange County for spending time with us at Broken Record. His new album, Pony, is out now wherever you get your music. And head to RexOrangeCounty.com for tour dates. You can check out more of Rex OC's music by visiting BrokenRecordPodcast.com and subscribing to our playlist for this episode. Broken Record is produced with help from Jason Gambrell and Milo Bell. Our theme music is by Kenny Beats. Stay tuned for next week's episode with Brandi Carlile and Tanya Tucker. I'm Justin Richmond.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of Musora: to inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to musora.com, M-U-S-O-R-A.com, to start a new musical journey today.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.